Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 833. It's 28th of July 2017. On the podcast today, I have Gil Holzman, President and CEO of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. That's ECO ticker. And Gil discusses the commencement of their 3D seismic survey and also goes through some of the highlights from their final results. Plus, I have Jim Williams, CEO of Ariane Silver, AGQ. And Jim explains why they undertook a recent placing and talks about their drill program on its lithium projects in Mexico. I also have, as of Friday, Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, covering the following stocks: Connect, that's CNCT, Parity, PTY, and Burford Capital, BUR. And Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about Advanced Oncotherapy, AstraZeneca, Cadence, and i3 Energy, recently floated, i3E, that is. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours, too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gil Holzman, President and CEO of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. Ticker there is ECO or Eco. Gil, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, since we last spoke, you've had a couple of bits of significant news out. We'll get to that in a bit. But as always, Gil, because you haven't been floated for too long, people listening right now, not aware of what you do. Can you explain, summarize what it is you're all about, please?
We are an oil and gas exploration company with licenses across the Atlantic margin in West Africa, in Namibia, and in South America or the Caribbean in Guyana. Two very prospective regions. Namibia is still yet to be proven to have commercial oil. It has commercial gas, and Guyana, of course, is the subject of the most interest in the oil and gas upstream world because of the recent discoveries made by Exxon and partners, now amounting to more than 2.5 billion barrels. This is by far the biggest oil discovery in the past decade, and Guyana is very much on the map for all the big names and all the explorers and upstream players, and we are very fortunate to be there together with Talo Oil as our partner.
Yes, you're in that space, and you released a couple of days ago the commencement of your seismic survey. Take us into the details there, Gil, and what you're hoping to, what your expectations are there.
Where our block, or Rindwick block, which, as I said, is operated by Talo Oil, our long-time time partner. They also are partners in Namibia. It's operated by Talo. Talo has a 60% working interest. We have 40% working interest. The Rindwick block is located just 6 kilometers up deep from the recent Liza and Payara discoveries made by Exxon. So that makes it a very, very, very interesting and highly prospective block. The block itself is 1,800 square kilometers, and whereas we were only obligated to shoot 1,000 square kilometers of 3D over the block in accordance with the petroleum agreement, and we only needed to start it 2 years from now, in 2019, we decided to actually almost triple the size of the survey, and we are shooting 2,550 square kilometers, and we are doing it 2 years ahead of time, simply because of the recent big discoveries and the completion of our 2D interpretation and regional data. And now we are very keen to start. We actually started this week the survey. It will last around 45 to 50 days to complete it. So we'll have the raw data in, I would say, mid-September, where immediately we will start processing and interpret it in a hope to identify additional targets for drilling in order to reconfirm the targets that we already see on the 2D data that we analyzed, and to be drill ready next year.
Excellent stuff. And so as yet, I mean, you know, what do you know about this area apart from, you know, it's very prospective and you've got ExxonMobil next door? What else do you know about it, Gil?
So as you said, ExxonMobil is next door, and actually the entire area is being held, or the current blocks are being held only by major and big companies: Talo, Exxon, Repsol, Anadarko, these kind of big players. The area is, as I said, it's probably the hottest area in the world at the moment for offshore oil exploration, because of the recent discoveries made by Exxon. Exxon drilled already 12 wells, only one came up dry. So 11 wells that were successful, and they're going to drill more and more during 2017 and 18. And they already announced the first investment decision. They're going to start pumping oil at a rate of 120,000 barrels a day as of 2020. So Guyana, wow, is becoming a major oil province. And as I said, we are happy and lucky and fortunate to be right next. So we want to, we want to confirm the potential that we have on our block.
Yeah, and so just to confirm, so obviously Talo Oil, the operator, they have 60%, is that right? And you have 40%, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. And so you're hoping to get results back from this in September, and where, obviously, depending on what the results are, but hopefully if everything goes to plan, and you know, what's next after that?
As I said, we already identified two targets, two big leads, let's call it this way at this stage, that might contain over 1 billion barrels of oil on our block. So we want to, of course, to cover it with 3D, to do all the necessary analysis in order to reconfirm these targets and to identify additional targets for drilling, hopefully in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's come forward a bit. And I know yesterday your results, you released your final results for the year, ended the 31st of March. And take us through some of the highlights there. And I'm sure some investors are happy to see you've got cash there.
Yeah, that's correct. Basically, this is the first time we file year-end results since we became an AIM company. Mm-hmm. We listed on AIM in February 2017, just 5 months ago. And so this is the first time we actually file financial statement results to the UK market. The highlights, as you said, yes, because of the very successful AIM admission and the fact that we raised double the amount of cash that we were after. Raised more than £5 million. We are in a very healthy cash position at the moment. We have more than $6 million Canadian dollars in the bank that will, of course, they will be earmarked towards exploration and towards this 3D campaign that we just started. We managed during the downturn of the oil prices, we managed to keep the company very tightly and lean managed. We were down 22% on G&A. We were down 25% on our compensation costs. We were down 12% on our professional fees. We were down 26% on our travel expenses, 72% down on our occupancy and office expenses. And the only thing that we were up is actually on our operational cost, actual exploration, we were up 5%. So on the one hand, we managed to keep the company in a very healthy position cash-wise, because we cut all kind of non-operational costs. But on the other hand, we managed to keep on progressing all our licenses in Namibia and in Guyana, and we actually spent a bit more last year on exploration. And of course, this year we'll see some additional exploration activity. As we just said, we just started a very big 3D campaign offshore Guyana.
Yeah. Okay. So it's going to be an exciting few months ahead of you, isn't it?
Yes, and as I said, the area is very, very hot. It attracts the interest of many big companies, big and medium size alike. We would like to evaluate all kind of opportunities going forward. As I said, we're very lucky to be able to finance our own way going forward. We have the sufficient amount of cash. Talo is a very experienced and professional operator, and we are very happy to be together with them on that block. And we will see, as you said, mid-September towards October, we will see the results, and I'm sure they will be even more positive than we think.
Okay, excellent stuff. Well, Gil, just to reiterate, if someone's listening right now and they like the sound of what you're doing and what the area you're in there and the news flow coming up, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
So, we are the only AIM company that has a direct exposure to this huge prospective oil province in Guyana. Of course, Talo is there, Exxon is there, Hess is there, all the big names, but we are the only small cap AIM company that has a direct exposure to Guyana and to Namibia. Both regions, we're going to see some drilling activity and additional exploration activity in the next few months, and they're going to be the focus of interest. So we are a direct ticker to this to these two very prospective plays, and of course you know, it's always nice and fun and very attractive to use the Vox Market website and application. It's very easy, it's very user friendly to follow those companies that you are interested in. It's very interactive and it's very professional to be able to be aware of all that's going on in the market and those companies that you are interested in.
Excellent. Gil, good to chat to you. And like I said, you've got a busy few months ahead, so hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thank you very much.
I'm sure we will. Thank you very much, Justin. Have a nice day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jim Williams, CEO of Ariane Silver. That's AGQ ticker. Jim, thanks for coming back on.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks for the invitation.
Now, we've got quite a few people wanted to ask you one specific question. I know you've had news out, and we'll get the news in a bit, but before we get to the question that people want to ask you, for people new to the podcast, Jim, or haven't heard of the company, could you explain what Ariane Silver is all about, please?
Well, basically, Ariane Silver is silver, lead, and zinc in Mexico, and more recently with some lithium acquisitions. They're now pitted into the lithium market with some nice projects. We've got 1,600 hectares under option, and we are now looking into, looking at what we think is a significant market with electric vehicles, etc., for lithium. So we've got silver, lead, and zinc plus lithium.
Excellent stuff. All right, Jim, well, before we get the news, let's get the question that everyone wanted to ask. I mean, you came on the podcast, a month or so ago, I think, and you mentioned there, amongst other things, that you were fully funded. I think that was on 29th of July, or 28th of June, that was, sorry. And then on the 30th of July, you raised £600,000. And a lot of people were quite annoyed because some people were expecting sort of drilling results or drilling to start, but instead you raised money. So can you explain how that happened and why it happened?
Right. In the first instance, yes. So, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, we were fully funded, right? We are fully funded. But we were offered the same again with the same condition, with the same terms. And to turn money down in this market for the size of the company we are, in my and the board's opinion, it would be ridiculous. Because what it does, it brings £600,000 gross onto the balance sheet. It allows you to do far more work than what we had previously envisaged. It allows us to look at acquisitions, which maybe prior we couldn't have looked at because of the expense. But it gives you that flexibility because, having worked in Mexico for 12 years now, things will go wrong somewhere along the line, okay? And you need to have a contingency in place. And what we don't want to do is spend money on drilling, spend money on metallurgy, and all of a sudden come end of this year think, hang on, we've got no money and we can't raise money because no one knows in 6 months' time how these financial markets will be. So basically, if you're offered money, take it.
Yeah, so as a small cap, essentially, I think people, are under the impression that it's easy to raise money if you're a listed company, but if you're a small cap in the exploration space, it's probably quite difficult. So if you are offered to raise money, what you will always accept. Is that the case?
Well, in this market, yes. And obviously, the price wasn't to everyone's liking, but we had no significant news within the last 4, 5, 6 weeks. So you can't really expect to do a fundraising at a significantly higher price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Irrespective of all that, we've got the money in the account now. we'd have far more flexibility to do things. And any shareholder, whether they came in at 0.5p last time or 0.5p this time or 1p 12 months ago plus, there is significant upside to make money on that right now with you know, hopefully pending positive news.
Yeah. So last time you came to the podcast, then when you said you were fully funded, you didn't need to raise, at that point in time, you weren't going to raise, and then it was after that time you're saying that you were approached to raise money. Is that the case?
Absolutely correct. Yeah, going back five, six weeks ago, we had £600 gross through our broker, and then we were fully funded. This came along, quite frankly, out of the blue, and it was all done within 2-3 days, which is not atypical with certain brokers. And it was done, and as I said, we were fully funded, but now we're even more fully funded. And it gives you the flexibility to do things. So there was no kind of misleading anybody. We were fully funded four or five weeks ago.
Yeah.
But that was just extra money.
Yeah. So I mean, a placing like that can be as quick as that, can't it? Because there was 2 weeks between the podcast and the raising. So it can happen in 2-3 days, yeah?
Well, again, Justin, I think a lot depends on the company and the people working on either side of the fence here. If the brokers are proactive and the company's proactive, then there's a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it doesn't always work this fast. And, you know, I hate to say it, many companies don't have this possibility, don't have this opportunity, and they don't survive, and they don't do any work, and they end up with lots of issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
You know, we've been close to the bone many times in the past, as many old, you know, investors will know. And it's not, you know, it's not good news to go down to the wire financially. It's, you know, ideally get money in the bank and have the opportunity to do things which you think are worthwhile doing at that point in time.
Yeah.
And you need money to do it. And the more money you have in the kitty, the more flexibility you've got.
Yeah, and I suppose, is it the case that if you have money, it's easy to get more money? If you don't have money, it's hard to get money?
Yeah, well, get money up to a certain point, right? Because, yeah, look, ideally now we won't get news out. You know, we are drilling, which we'll come on to in a moment, no doubt. And hopefully, in a relatively short period of time, we have good news coming out. And all being well, this should increase the share price a bit. Or even hopefully a bit more, then, you know, people can be hopefully generally quite content, at least those who've come in the last few months, okay?
Yeah, okay.
And build it up from there. Then if news goes well and, you know, things are brighter and the share price increases, then, you know, there's still possibility to do more fundraisings in the future, but ideally at a higher price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's move forward to.
Drilling is an expensive, exercise. Metallurgical test work is an expensive exercise. So you have to plan ahead.
Yeah.
And the more money we have, the more drilling and more holes we can plan. Then on the first batch of drilling, if, for example, we have good results, whether they are semi-quantitative or quantitative, then we can keep the drilling machine on site. And, increase the size of the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about that, because you announced on the 24th the commencement of the drill program. And tell us, take us into detail, yep. Jim, what are you doing there? What's happening?
Well, basically, when we last spoke 4 or 5 weeks ago, we had a drill machine lined up. And we had two drill machines lined up, a plan A and a plan B. Plan A actually had significant gearbox problems, and we couldn't have drilled down to the depth we wanted to go in these unconsolidated sediments. So that went by the wayside. And the Plan B rig actually went to another client, which only finished with them a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and that's the rig we've got now. So that was the delay in not starting the drilling program a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
The drill machine actually had... mechanical issues, significant mechanical issues.
Okay, I can see on Vox, actually, on your page on Vox, Fuad has put it on there, pictures of the drill machine, and it's in situation
the,
there.
The new machine is on there now since the weekend.
Okay.
Monday morning, it arrived on site.
So take us through what you're doing and how long it'll take, and when do you hope to get some results back, Jim?
Well, we started drilling as of Monday. This is the fourth day of drilling. Right now, we've had no significant issues. We're drilling a number of holes in each of these so-called salars, these ancient brine lagoons, okay? And, you know, it's hard to say how long it'll take because it depends on the water content of these unconsolidated sediments, because at the end of the day, this is an auger drill machine and not, as with hard rock, a typical reverse circulation or diamond coring machine. Mm-hmm. It's an auger drill machine, so we don't want too much moisture content. We don't want it to be too wet, otherwise your recovery will be insufficient. And from a QA, QC point of view, the results, if any, would be quite meaningless. So assuming everything goes well, we expect to finish this first batch of drilling within 4 to 6 weeks. Then, as I mentioned previously, just a short while ago, if, for example, during this period of time, we see encouraging results, whether they be semi-quantitative, if not quantitative, then we can keep the drill machine on these sites and increase the size of the program.
Yeah, exactly. Excellent, Jim. Well, listen, with that in mind, if someone's listening right now and they like what you're up to and where you're active, in what sector, and they're not following you on Vox, could you give them three reasons why they should follow you and hit that follow button on Vox Markets, please?
Well, Justin, I think, my three reasons won't really differ from the one we just done 4 or 5 weeks ago, because look, we're a small market cap. The upside potential is, I think, quite significant. I just mentioned we had some teething issues with our initiation of our drilling program, which, we're third-party related, but no excuses here. We had some teething issues, okay? We've now rectified that. The drill machine's on-site drilling. I think we can get some good positive news out of these lithium salars, and that can only give upside onto the stock. It has to give upside onto the stock. And, finally, whether you like the board or hate the board, right, and the management team, we've actually been here before. We've actually put a mine in production, albeit, it was to a commissioning stage and the silver price dropped at the wrong time. Again, third-party issues. But, I think we could, with all everything being well, we can do this again.
Excellent, Jim. Good to chat to you.
That's three compelling reasons why.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jim, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Justin. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yes, good. And oddly, last week I was in Centre Park, so just about to get my son on the quad bikes, because there's a little event that you can do. And a reminder came up, say, Russ Mould's on the podcast in 15 minutes. And, oh, I haven't cancelled the diary thing.
No, you kindly warned me, though, so yeah. I was fine.
And I thought, oh, no, Russ is going to be sitting there waiting for me to call him, and but you sent a reassuring email saying, don't worry, enjoy it.
You kindly warned me. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so we're back. What are we looking at today, Russ?
So we're going to do three against the field, all of which we've looked at before, but there's been stacks going on, lots of updates coming through. Mm-hmm. We're going to go back to Connect quickly, which we talked about 2 weeks ago going into the trading statement. We're going to look at Parity after its trading statement, and then we've had results and an investment result from Burford.
Okay, all right, okay, cool. Well, let's go with Connect first, shall we? CNCT is ticker?
CNCT, yeah, it's a FTSE small cap, and we talked about it very nervously 2 weeks ago, because since we first looked at it, the share price had gone from 120 to 90p in not far off a straight line, and as you pointed out at the time, once the chart broke below 120, then it was really looking pretty ugly. The things bounced back to 112p, on the back of a trading statement, which basically said, move along, nothing to see here, which frankly was, was remarkable. The company kept its cool. It didn't panic. It didn't put out a, we'd know of no reason why our share price going down statement, because that only fans the flames. Mm-hmm. It played a completely straight bat, and in my opinion, there did the right thing. So looking at the trading statement, trading in line was the key phrase. In terms of the actual business mix, yes, news and magazines down 4%. parcel freight up 4%, but remaining very, very competitive. Anything in news and magazines is probably doing better than they thought. Parcel freight is doing a little bit worse. The Pass My Parcel business is absolutely booming. Parcels up nearly 150% year on year on average by the week. And Books very strong through its Wordery website. So overall, again, if you're a momentum player, you're a growth player, do move along, because there is nothing to see here. Mm-hmm. This is a well-run business, a mature business that generates plenty of cash and pays a decent yield. It sold its education and care business to RM for just under 57 million quid to reduce its debt. And so what you've got now, and this is why we were getting nervous 2 weeks ago, because we talked about Carillion and some of these stocks where the dividend yield was higher than the PE, which is the market's way of saying your earnings forecasts are too optimistic and your dividend forecast is too optimistic. Well, at 90p, Connect was one of those stocks, which is why I was starting to come out in a cold sweat. Even though its free cash flow is miles stronger than Carillion's has been for a long time, and its earnings cover for the dividend is miles stronger. So you've still got a stock that's on a yield of about 7%, 6.5%, 7%, with a PE of something not too dissimilar. So the market is clearly still nervous that, yes, although it's clearly not growing, that some of these businesses it addresses go into reverse gear, newspapers, magazines, books, and so on. So that's clearly the long run's concern. But right now, the company's managing the cost base. It's got things going, ticking over for cash. The yield to me looks pretty good, solid right now. So again, Income Hunt says it's for you only. One wrinkle to note, the company just appointed a new joint broker, Berenberg, alongside JP Morgan Cas. So maybe they'll be taking some advice on Berenberg and what to do about the share price. And now it's all eyes down for the full year results on the 26th of October.
Yeah. And I always search, when you get a big dividend of that, any release, I always do Control F or Apple F and just search for, just type in dividend, see if they've mentioned it at all. Because you always want, in a trading update, they probably won't do that. But I mean, I always want to know if they, confident or they give a good guidance on the dividend going forward, Because if they don't mention it, you can think, well, that doesn't look very safe if it's very high dividend, So it's always worth doing a search for that, isn't it? If you are for the income only, always make sure they reassess or saying that, yes, dividend is progressive, we're still going to pay a dividend this year. Because if they don't mention it, or they've changed their mind, or changed the sentiment on it a little bit.
Absolutely. No, I mean, the website is plastered with the phrase progressive dividend policy. If there is any retreat there, then... watch out. But I mean, the shares have actually bounced now from 90 to 112, still below where we first mentioned them, but at least a little bit of welcome reassurance there.
From a charting point of view, I'd wanted to retest that little higher than that £1
back to 120 and give it a nudge there.
Nothing rebounds in a V like that. You want to see so you want to see a retest of that low and then a gradual rise, hopefully. Cool. Is it Parity?
Parity, PTY on AIM. It's an 11 million market cap company, so it's frankly probably below a lot of people's radars and therefore potentially their risk tolerance, and that's fine. Shares have gone from like 9.5p to 11 since we first looked at it back in February, so that's okay. And a trading statement released earlier in July, on track, boss Alan Rommel, he's overseeing a shift in the company. It's been a failed acquisition vehicle that's got itself into an awful lot of debt trouble. Margins haven't been high enough, and he's and his team are reshaping the company, emphasizing the higher margin consulting business and de-emphasizing the lower margin recruitment business. First half profits look like they're going to rise double digit, which is bang on line with what people are looking for the full year, which is great. But best of all, debt is coming down. It was 7.4 million quid 2 years ago, 4.4 million quid in December. It's down to 2.3 million quid by June. Okay, there's a 1.8 million pension deficit on there, so let's not get cocky or carried away here, particularly because margins are still pretty thin. But lower debt means less risk, means potentially higher earnings because there's less interest being paid, and a higher multiple on those earnings because the risk is coming down. So if you look at the market cap of 11 million, the debt, the pension deficit, the enterprise value adding those together is about 15 million. The company's got sales of 90. So if you can do anything margin-wise, it's a very, very cheap stock. But clearly the balance sheet risk is keeping people away. They need to. If they keep paying the debt down, that risk goes away. And for a stock on 10 times PE, that's probably, for small cap punters, that's probably the kind of risk you can afford to take, in the knowledge that if the debt begins to spin out of control, you are in trouble still because margins are pretty thin.
Well, I do like small caps, and I mean, like I said, they seem to be doing the right things, making the right noises and making the right moves, don't they? So one would suggest that they're not going to stop doing that because they're fully aware that they've got to get that debt down. So correct.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the key to the story at the moment.
Yeah, cool. Okay, and the last one, Russ.
Last but not least is Burford, B-U-R, on AIM. This is the company that invests and seeds legal cases, mainly, I should stress, for corporations, not for individuals. Mm-hmm. The stock has gone like a rocket. It's on AIM, but it's got a market cap of more than £2 billion. Yeah. And since we first looked at it in the spring, it's gone from 7.30 to around a tenner. Two pieces of news this week have given the stock a bit of a fresh lift. First of all, what it calls an investment result. Remember, it's one of its biggest law cases it's been involved in is the Elliott active hedge fund management against the Argentinian government. It's also been involved in an Argentinian case where the government basically expropriated two airlines' assets. And Burford seeded the defendants, and the defendants have won. So according to the lawsuit, Argentina now needs to pay $324 million in compensation. The numbers aren't finalised, but Burford reckons its share of that is about $140 million, which for a $13 million investment made in 2010 looks pretty good.
Yeah, nice.
So certainly, again, it's a big affirmation of the company's model. And then following up from that, a couple of days later, we had some half-year results from the company, where in the first half of the year, it earned more than it did in the whole of last year put together, $155 million at the operating level. It seeded another $488 million of investments in the first half. And because of this whacking surge in profitability, one of the things that we've always worried about when we've talked about it is, oh my God, isn't the stock just looking really expensive right now? Mm-hmm. But with earnings going to more than double this year and probably on the face of it, knock analyst expectations out of the park, even though the shares have gone up to a tenner, it's still now actually back to around 15 times earnings. Okay, the yield of 1% is not going to interest income hunters, but the 15 times PE for a stock with this earnings momentum may well continue to catch eyes. Now, if there are any income hunters out there, as we've mentioned before, the stock has issued three bonds, which are all available on the order book for retail bonds on London Stock Exchange. At the coupons, 6.5% 2022, 6 1/8 for 2024 redemption, 5% for 2026, which they only issued in May. Now, those bond prices have gone up. So the yields have come down, because just as the same with shares, the higher the price, the lower the yield goes. So the yields to maturity are now 3.9% for the 2022, 4.4% for the 2024, and 4.8% for the 2026. So there's no real angle there relative to the maturity and the yield. If I was forced to choose between the three, I'd probably go for the one in the middle. But also don't forget, 4.4% for 2024, so that's a seven-year bond. Our good friends in Greece have just issued a five-year bond for a yield of 4.625%. Oh. I know which risk I'd rather take.
Yeah, exactly. But, look at the chart. It's one of those stocks you'd love to have just gone in and sat there because it's just because, I mean, I can see you go back a couple of years, it was a quid, and now it's like over 10 quid. And it keeps rising, but it's one of those ones where you wouldn't jump in because it's risen too fast, too far. And then all of a sudden, it keeps going up. And one of you come back 6 months later, it's still going up. And you think, oh my word, I should have invested 6 months ago. But you think, is there a top here somewhere? It's got to be, because literally the trajectory
there will be
is taking.
I mean, there'll have to be at some stage. But again, what it probably means is they probably need, if something's to go wrong, they need to seed a few cases that they lose.
And do
their dough, clearly. And then if the return on investment starts to fall, that's when people will start to worry. But again, if you're worried about the share price, the bonds are a potential way into the story. If you are an income hunter, there is an option there, which, again, given it's tradable through all, be something to perhaps to consider if income is your game rather than playing the strong earnings momentum we're seeing right now.
Marvellous, Russ. Thanks for that.
It's been a pleasure.
Catch you soon.
Have a lovely weekend. Just take care now. Cheers. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're right, Al.
I'm very good, Just looking forward to the weekend. Bring it on. It's been quite a week.
Well, do you know what? The missus and the kids have gone away for about 9 days. It's summer holidays. She's doing a sort of family tour, visiting her parents. They've got a Thorpe Park as well. They're staying there for one night. They're going somewhere else. But part of me thinking, brilliant. But towards the end, I'll be looking at a caveman rattling around the house, just panicking that I need tidying up before they come back. You know, they go, oh, I'll just start putting stuff away.
Just
everywhere.
be honest, you're actually missing them, aren't you?
They've only just left, so no, I'm not. I'm just saying, yes. I'm just standing on the drive thinking, are they really gone for 9 days? Amazing. Yeah. The missus and the kids. So I can just do anything. I just fall asleep in front of the telly if I want and wake up there with a, you know, with a microwave meal on my chest. I don't care. marvellous. Anyway, Al, so what are we looking at today stocks-wise? What are you looking at?
Well, just to say very briefly prior to that, I went out with the family last night and we saw the film Dunkirk, which...
I've heard good things about that. Is it good?
Has to be seen. It's beautifully directed. It's a real epic film, and it really betrays, I think, the desperation of the men on the beach. I mean, I won't go into it, but I'm a bit of a World War II buff, but that was a very... It was a real turning point for the British Army, but well worth seeing if you get the chance. Anyway, plug for the film.
Do you know what? I'm supposed to go play a round of golf with the mates coming down this weekend, but I mean, the weather's not very good, so maybe we'll just go to the cinema together. We don't two fellas going to the cinema, but it's a manly film, so it doesn't matter, you know? So, anyway.
Well, it is. There's no slush. They don't try to sort of dumb it down at all. It is what it is, and it's sheer desperation. And these guys trying to get off the beach, getting torpedoed, bombed, Stuka dive bombers, you know, German snipers, the whole works. It really is very good indeed. Well worth it.
Cool. All right. On to stocks, Al. What's going on?
Okay. Well, it's been quite a week. Yesterday, of course, we had a further battering for AstraZeneca, in which I'm a shareholder. And this is the British drugs giant that every year there are rumours of Pfizer takeovers and all the rest of it. But the shares, really, up to a couple of weeks ago, have been powering along quite nicely. I got into them at about £40 a year or so ago, and held the stock. It pays out a 5% dividend yield, so I'm quite happy with that. And then the shares literally touched 55 quid a few weeks ago, and then there were rumours that Pascal Soriot, the CEO, was going on to Pastures New, and of course that hit the shares slightly yesterday when the results came out, and the dry results. We found out why, because although the stock had performed in line with expectations, revenues were in line at 10.5 billion. There were the Mystic lung cancer drug. The results from the trials on that were disappointing, but it seems that that combined with what is really a landmark joint venture with Merck didn't go down too well with investors holding the stock and institutions. Even so, I mean, the stock is now down well over sort of 22% from a couple of weeks ago. So to my mind, I mean, the revenues for the company were in line with expectations, and a company the size and the nature of AstraZeneca is always enjoying successes with its trials and receiving FDA approval for one trial, whilst on the other hand another one fails. So I think once the market sits back and takes a look at the company, where it's going, I think now the shares are offering pretty good value. It's not a spectacular performer, but you know, if the shares have been pushing at year highs, and if we look at the chart, for instance, the stock fell below the 200-day moving average, which is at £47. So if we can start to push back to that, well, I would say that at current levels, if you want to buy in, you'll still pick up the interim dividend, and if the stock can get back to the 200-day and there's some clarity on the new CEO in the future, then this could make a really good solid hold for any portfolio.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Yesterday on the podcast, Chris Bailey there from Financial Orbit covered these, and he was saying, if you're a holder, you know, still hold. He said, but I mean, as yet, like with any fall, if you're looking to get in, he said, don't yet, wait for it to settle down. And I think that with any chart, but it's definitely on my watch just now with a dividend like that. And of course, there'll be a bit of volatility in the next few days. But when you think of it, it came off like 15% yesterday. And that's like 6 billion in value. That's because they're a $60 billion. It's nuts, isn't it? Crazy.
But it also came off. It came off about 4 billion after Pascal Soriot indicated that he was going to move on, and you know, he's, you know, okay, Pascal Soria is responsible for the direction. He's the figurehead of the company. But at the end of the day, Astra is such a giant organization. Yeah. So many projects underway that him leaving is not really going to upset the apple cart. And you know, probably someone from management may take the step up, or they'll bring in some visionary from outside to push the company off. But I mean, this is a great British company. Let's not forget, you know, Pfizer have wanted to take it over. They rebuffed the takeover, rebuffed the approaches last year, and still the company is making good progress. And it's not as though it missed the revenue target. The actual financial performance was in line with expectations. So, to my mind, this is a massive overreaction. But I think Chris is right. You know, be circumspect. You know, look at the stock, let it settle down, and then I think if you're buying at this level, you're going to get a good dividend, and there's a real chance for some decent upside in the not too distant future.
Well, do you know what? I've just hit the follow button on Fox. It's on my watch list, so I'm going to put it there because I just think, you know, whenever you see unexpected falls like this, sit back and wait with the chart to produce some confirmations of a bottom. Like I said, don't try and catch a falling knife because more often than not, it can fall a little bit further. And so you never know. But it's on my watch list, AZN AstraZeneca. What else are you chatting about, Al?
Well, a couple of others, if you just wanted to mention Advanced Oncotherapy. Last week, the company announced that it had raised, or it had a $3.9 million loan available to it, and the loan basically marked the end of the highly controversial financing facility with Bracknell Group, Bracknell Investment Group, which, of course, was being regarded in some quarters as a death spiral. But what the company have done with this loan, they've said they won't be using Bracknell again. They've issued warrants to Bracknell for the remainder of the outstanding arrangement, but the funding has come from AB Segula, who are already a significant shareholder of the company, and it includes a group of Swedish investors, including Peter Gyllenhammar, who's the former CEO of Volvo, a highly respected businessman. And you know, this is highly significant because, you know, these guys aren't going to put money into a company like Advanced Oncotherapy unless they see massive potential for the future, unless they see technology that is going to be life-changing for people. And I've said before when we've spoken about it, but I think AVO needs to be looked at. It's a company that's going to change lives in the future once the machine is in circulation next year, and once they have the Harley Street facility open. And you know, significant investors are realizing this, so I think it's a highly significant step for the company. It, to my mind, puts to bed once and for all the concerns about funding going forward. Clearly, the company's still got to sell machines. It's still got to make that progress. But I think investors and possibly buyers, too, have been sidetracked by the events of the past 6 months with Bracknell to the detriment of the company. But we're over that hurdle now, so I'm looking to the future.
Mm-hmm. All right. But do you know what I say? Yeah, I mean, I'm willing it to go up. It had a little spike up on that news, isn't it, a while back? But I mean, it's still in a downtrend on the chart. So it's almost, I think, the only thing that'll get this thing motoring is if some kind of sale, you know, of one of those things. Yeah. That'll get it really motoring. And I think then you'll see a massive takeoff in the share price. But I'm sort of happy to wait there. But I think, you know, the technology is amazing, like you said, but I'm happy to wait and see. What else are you looking at, Al? Yeah. Anything else?
Yes, indeed. Just to mention that investors following or investing in Cadence Minerals, that's KDNC, will have had a nice uplift over the past week. Of course, the government announced earlier this week that it's going all electric, like France, in its vehicles by 2040. So clearly, that's a big focus on lithium producers. And of course, Cadence has the portfolio of lithium mines and partnerships and investments around the world. But particularly in Europe, it's key. They had the investment into Sinovac, which is the big Czechoslovakian facility. So nice little uplift there, but still, really, it's very, very early days. So more to come there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was saying that a while back. Remember, I said that the share prices is oversold a little bit. It's bound to do a bounce somewhere. Yeah, yeah. And fair play, it did bounce nicely from that level, and so it's looking quite good there. Okay, and anything else, Al?
Yes, indeed. Like you, Jess, I'm a shareholder in Glenwick, which was, of course, the vehicle that was...
Well, I'm not a shareholder in Glenwick.
You're not? Oh, my apologies. No. Okay. I get confused in my old age. My apologies for that.
You should say that in every stock you talk about. Like you just, I'm a holder in this, and I'll just say, how are you talking about? That's when I start to worry, if you started saying that for every stock. Like you just, I'm a holder in AstraZeneca.
Yes.
Anyway, yes. Well, do you know what? I'm very interested about this, because someone did say in the week, and I know part of them now, I don't understand what's going on, but there's been a float of I3E. Is that right?
I3E Energy. That's right. So Glenmuck shareholders, the proposal is twofold. There's a twofold investment here. Firstly, they've bought a block of shares in the IPO of I3E, which I'm going to talk about in a second. And also, there will be a stake in a company called Cora Gold, which is expected to come to market in September. So for the at the suspension price of Glenmuck, that basically makes up the value of the two investments. Now I3E, just to give you an overview. They have acquired the operating rights, and they are the 100% owners of the Liberator block in the North Sea, which was discovered by Dana Petroleum in 2013, mm-hmm. And it's adjacent to the Blake field, which is about a kilometre or two from Blake's oil producing centre. So basically, there's a lot of oil down there. It's well known. They own the rights to it, and they expect to start producing oil from that Liberator field in quarter one 2018. Mm-hmm. But I took a close look at the company, because obviously, you know, I'm a shareholder by default through Glenmuck, there's a fairly impressive list of directors and people involved here, and in particular the operations team as well. So the company was actually formed in 2014. It sought out the licensing arrangements last year, raised $7.5 million in the recent IPO, and it's engaged OGA and Blake to work with it to develop that field. So clearly Blake are already producing oil a couple of kilometres away, so it should be a fairly straightforward process to get the oil out of the Liberator field. On the board, you've got the non-exec chairman, David Knox, who's ex-BP and Arco and Shell. You've got Neil Carson, who's the CEO, and Neil Carson worked at Ithaca Energy, and of course we've spoken about Ithaca Energy before, and that's had quite a strong run. He's also ex-BP and Amoco. A guy called Richard Amers, who's ex-BP and Iona Energy and Amoco, and also the FD finance director Graham Heath worked with Neil Carson at Ithaca. You've also got a highly experienced operations team as well. And okay, so the company's worth 9 million market cap. The IPO was not successful. It came in at 55p, immediately dropped to 43p, and as I'm talking this morning, we're around the 30p mark. There's been quite a fall, but I think before investors write it off, I'm making an assumption here that the reason for the fall in the oil price is that a lot of Glenmuck investors are seeing the fall in the price and selling out and just taking their money out. So at some point this will level out, and once investors and institutions get a chance to look at the quality of this company, how close they are to production, then I think we'll see an uplift. I'm going to, clearly with Angus Energy, which we discussed the other week, there are some parallels here, because you've got an oil asset which is close to production, as Angus had when it floated last year with the Brocken well. So given the ties with Blake here, it looks as though IA3 Energy is pretty close to producing oil, and you know, we're maybe 6-9 months away from that happening. But once that happens, of course, it's going to be due a massive re-rating. It's only worth 8-9 million quid at the moment, and to my mind, there should be a fairly decent chunk of upside here.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. And do your own research. I can't find it hard to get that ticket in my head. I3E, isn't it? I feel like I said I3E.
I3E, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I3E, cool.
In fact, the the website's very good. If you Google i3 Energy, you'll see the website, and their website's very good. All the information you'll need is on there. But this is so you know, as a Glenwick shareholder, I'm quite happy to hold. In fact, I'm watching this. Once it settles out, I'm probably gonna sort of add to my holding here as well. So,
okay.
Clearly, do your own research. It's not for everyone. Shares can go down as well as up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, of course, it's a small cap in the oil and gas sector industry, so it can be quite volatile. So, like I said, as Alan said, do your research. Marvellous, Al, thanks for that, and speak next week, fella.
Thanks, Jess. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Blenheim Natural Resources. At four, that's BNR, by the way. At four, Primoris Investments. Primoris Investments, even. PRIM, Prim. At three, always there, Ascent Resources, AST. At two, UK Oil and Gas, that's UCOG. And number one most followed company in the last 24 hours was Premier African Minerals, PREM. Hopefully we'll get George Roach on the podcast very soon. Okay, top five most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours were from five, SDX Energy, that's SDX, that's PDMR Dealing. At four, Angus Energy, ANGS, update on next exchange bond issue. At three, Seeing Machines, ticker there is C, only two E's. Fleet update on that. At two, Vast Resources, quarterly production summary and operations update. VAST is ticker there. And number one most liked RNS was from Ascent Resources. That was yesterday afternoon, or mid-morning, I think, or maybe afternoon, I don't know. AST is together as Holdings Inc. Company. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciate us.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.